Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And this is actually our first live recording. We are recording in front of a live studio audience. I've always wanted to say that.
Oh, okay.
Like,
well, why don't you say it again, just because you've now...
Live studio audience. Kind of like Cheers used to say that, those old sitcoms.
It's a lot better than a dead studio audience.
Well, I don't know.
Those really just get smelly. And
well, we've only just got started.
We can suck the energy out of the room pretty quickly.
We'll see how we do. Here tonight, live with our special guest, Lance Scapura.
Very good.
Executive Director of Thoreau NM.
A production company.
Yes, which...
And falafel stand.
Variety is good.
Well, you know, if one thing doesn't work, you got to have a little something on the side.
And Thoreau NM is the producer of Hotline, mm-hmm. which we will be treated to here this evening.
Yes, indeed.
And you, in fact, are the director of that show.
I am indeed.
So let us start at the very beginning.
My mother liked my father a lot, and they got married. And, well, things just happened, and three children later, I came around.
Now, what on earth possessed you to found a theater company in Pittsburgh? Was it alcohol?
No, it was unemployment.
Ah, very good.
And that's the truth. We were in the first Bush recession. Not the first W, it was the first George regular recession. We were unemployed, and after a day of handing out resumes and being told, "I'm sorry, we're in the middle of a recession," we would come home and try to find.
Well, that was polite.
Yeah. Well, I was cleaning it up for the audience. We decided that we would put together a theater company.
And the name is unusual, Thoreau NM.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Well, absolutely nothing.
All right, moving on.
Now, the story goes that. Whenever, again, we started off on unemployment, and whenever my managing director, Wendy Ray, who is also my good lady wife, and
Wendy,
I started,
stand up.
And I started the company, we didn't have a pot to piss in. Luckily, the apartment we were renting did have a toilet, so we were good to go on that. But we really couldn't go out and have a good time. We would... You know, come home.
Gather around the toilet.
Yeah, exactly. And that's very interesting because we didn't even have a television. And this is pre-computer days, so we didn't have a whole lot to do. Well, you know, that we can talk about. Anyway, we had a friend by the name of Elliot. Great guy. One of the true poets in the world. I mean, he actually was he wasn't a poet who was a janitor. He wasn't a poet who was a high school teacher. That's all he did. And Elliot had a lot of money. Well, probably better said, his mom had a lot of money. His mom organized labor in a maternity ward. I think that's called an obstetrician.
And that's not what I think of when I think of organized labor.
Okay, well,
I think that's your gag, right?
Okay.
All right, rim
and,
shot.
And anyway, because Elliot was a only child, he would buy when we would go out. So we always hung out with Elliot. He would read us some verse, we would have a couple of drinks, we'd hang around, but Elliot always liked to go to the same bar. And there was this one little bar, I think it was called Kylie's in Crafton. It's in where the bus station is right now, the busway station. The building doesn't exist anymore. But we were such regulars there that this one barkeep would see us coming in and he would always say in this thick Pittsburgh dialect, "Hey, look, it's Thoreau and M."
Because his last name was Thoreau, and you were N.M.
And you know what?
And why didn't he ever learn your name?
And here's the interesting thing. That would have been a much better gag if I hadn't flubbed the punchline. You know, if I would have like put the throw in back and said, the point.
Oh, yeah. But now it appears in writing as Thoreau, comma, and the letter mm-hmm. N, the letter M, mm-hmm. as if it's a town in New Mexico.
There is actually a town in New Mexico, but it's not called Thoreau and M. Surprisingly, no. It's called Through and M.
Okay.
It's spelled Thoreau. Comma NM.
Wait, no, that's Thoreau. That is Thoreau.
Well, it all depends on how you pronounce it. The guy who
that's damn
this.
Thoreau.
You don't like Thoreau?
No. Well, I mean, it would be better for your company, I think, if they pronounced it Thoreau.
But the wonderful thing about this little town is that it's about 60 miles out of Gallup, and whenever you're driving from Pittsburgh to Southern California, which we were doing at the time, you go past this little town, and it says Through New Mexico. And underneath it says, no services. And so, if you're going to start a theater company on unemployment, you're probably going to do it with very little services, so there's another good reason to call it that.
So a photograph of that sign has got to be like your logo.
It is.
It is!
Thanks to the young and lovely Andy Coleman.
Hey, Mr. Coleman. Thank you. Behind the camera, Mr. Coleman is also one of our Berg Vivant contributors, reviewing theater, art gallery openings and such. Tell me about this play, Hotline, that we're going to see this evening.
Well, Hotline here at the Arcade, which, by the way, is a wonderful space.
Yes.
Is in a sense an unintended love letter between Pittsburgh New Works Festival and the Arcade. We would have never even known this script existed if it hadn't been for the Pittsburgh New Works Festival, which we've been a part of for about 15 years on and off. The script came into New Works. We read it of the 33 plays that were available to us to do for New Works. We wouldn't have met Cheryl Navo, who is the wonderful playwright of this play. We certainly wouldn't have cast any of these three actors because we didn't know them. We met them during those cattle call auditions, that lovely two-day bloodbath at New Works.
Now, is everybody here familiar with the Pittsburgh New Works Festival? I hear some clapping. And by the way, you know, since we're addressing the audience directly and breaking that fourth wall, I will say that we will take questions from the audience at the close of this interview for myself regarding Berg Vivant, for Lance regarding Thoreau NM, or for us both regarding completely unrelated topics that have absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about. But I'm telling you this now because the absolute worst thing is when you say, any questions from the audience, and everybody sits there and looks at you like you're from outer space. So think about them now. And save them to the end, but...
And if I may interrupt.
Yeah.
The important thing about that is that we will take the questions, we will not give any answers.
We'll see. Maybe our cocktails will loosen us up by then, but Pittsburgh New Works Festival has been around for about 25 years.
Yes.
And there is only one other festival like it in the world, somewhere in Germany. They did this comparison. And they accept one-act scripts from all around the planet, and they choose 12 per year to produce for the very first time ever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're produced by 12 different theater companies in the city. So it's really sort of like striking the gong and bringing the Pittsburgh theater community together.
Absolutely.
And it's a month-long festival, which now performs at Off the Wall Theater in Carnegie. And yes, indeed. And Thoreau NM has been with a producer in the festival for how many years now?
We started in year three whenever they expanded from a three-week festival to a four-week festival.
That was year three of the festival?
Three year of the festival. It was our first year of producing. So it was 1994 whenever we joined.
Wow. I don't know if anybody's been with the festival that long.
I believe that South CCAC is probably the longest. But there are a list of companies that started around the same time that we did that just don't exist anymore.
And by the way, for those of you that don't know, the New Works Festival was founded by Donna Ray, who you might remember as Terminal Stare from the Chili Billy Cardilly Chiller Theater. Actually founded New Works Festival about 25 years ago.
And a lot of the times we did the play picking on her porch.
Yeah.
They're in
humble beginnings.
Absolutely. But it was a lot of fun back in the day. So, I mean, one of the things I like about the New Works Fest is that it's sort of a MacGyver theater. Because you're doing...
on a shoestring?
You know? Absolutely. You're coming up. You've got these scripts. You want to produce shows so that the playwright gets the opportunity to see them, to see them in the full light of day. Unfortunately, you can't do a full set or anything like that because it's in repertory. You're doing three shows a night. You can only do it with this, that, and the other thing. So our budgets are literally into the tens of dollars. And and you've got to, you'll see the set tonight is the table back here, two chairs. And
spared no expense for you, folks.
Exactly. And but you need to be able to get it off in 15 minutes so that the and the other team.
Do you notice Mike Bazzelli's the first one to laugh?
Bad person. And I don't think he could laugh 15 minutes.
You're getting punchy here on Bergville tonight. Well, tell us about this play in particular.
Well, again, we picked this out of 33 scripts that were presented to us. Last year we did an F.J. Heartland play that was very, very intense. It was about school shootings. And
so it was a comedy.
Yes, exactly. At the end of each one, at the end of each night, Tom Cullis, who was one of our actors, used to say that we got to go home and shower because you just felt so bad and so abused by what happened on stage. So this year we really wanted to go with something that was just light, easy, that you wouldn't have to feel completely drained about. We read Hotline, which is all about people calling a swear hotline. Basically, you call this hotline up, and you just swear to get rid of your anxiety, to get rid of your frustration.
This should exist for real.
It does.
Are you
kidding
me? That's
the amazing thing. Cheryl Neva, who lives in Germany, actually read an article about a German therapy line that does just this. And as part of her playwriting class, they said, find something in the real world and make a play. And that's exactly what she did.
So wait, you call it up.
Mm-hmm.
And
you just let loose with a foul, disgusting line of naughty words. And that way you can get it out of your system and move on with your day.
This is for real. Did you guys call it?
No, because...
You've got to be shitting me. You didn't call this number?
He gonna bleep that.
Oh, in the video I will, but in the podcast it's unedited, for God's sake. I can't believe you directed this show for the... You didn't call this number.
We did
Wait
not.
A minute. What's the number? Can we call it now?
You know, it is a German number. It's kind of like...
We'll use Arcade's phone.
Look, I'm trying to make a nice partnership.
I
don't want to have them call me up and say, this $2,000 phone call, what was it about?
$2,000? You're going to swear that long?
Well, I work with actors. Of course I'm going to swear that long.
Well, tell you what, tell me about your actors. Talk to me about this cast.
This cast, again, one of the wonderful things about the New Works Festival is that you get to see people that you've never seen before. Usually whenever you're starting to cast, you start thinking about people you know in this part or that part or the other part. We have Anne Tessera. I think I got that right.
Well, they're clapping anyway.
Joel Ambrose. Lisa Dern. All are wonderful wonderful actors. Never met any of them. We went through the bloodbath.
Still?
No, well, I don't want to get to know them. They're actors.
Oh.
Okay. Anyway, we went through the bloodbath that is the casting process. And what happens is that you don't get to say, oh, I want this person, this in person, because there's 12 other companies saying, no, you can't have them.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically make a plan on levels of who you want in each different part. I actually put 12 different people that could be in the part on my list so that I don't get into arguments, because I'm not a confrontational kind of guy. And all of these actors we had never met before, I had seen them do 2 minutes of a monologue.
Mm.
And I said, okay, I'm putting them in. So you're casting sort of blindly. You could have somebody who does a wonderful monologue but can't remember more than that 2 minutes and you're stuck. Luckily, this is probably one of the most wonderful casts I've ever worked with. When we started, I had an entirely different vision of where the play was going. I wanted Anne's character to be a little less, I'll say, more normal. And every time we came in, Anne would show some other sort of weird neuroses, and and it was like, Anne, is that you or is that the character? And she would say the character, and we would say, okay, incorporate that. A lot of times,
now that we know you're not psychotic, please carry on. Yeah.
What one of the things is, as a director, there's a lot of different ways of directing. I'm sure you know, because you've directed. A lot of times you have to direct by putting your hand on everything and saying, you'll do it this way. And sometimes you just sort of let the actors play and let them do what they want to do. This time, I wasn't really a director. I was more of an editor. I had let these folks go loose, show me something. I'd say, I like that. I don't like that. I like that. I don't like that. Hmm. And then we whittled it down to a final project. Very different way of working for me.
They're pretty sharp.
They
and
are wonderful.
In fact, at the New Works Festival Gala, they do present awards for Best Play, Best Playwright, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Anne won Best Leading Actress.
She did indeed.
And yes. And Joel won Best Leading Actor.
That's true.
Both out of 12 plays. Both winners from this show.
And you will see why in about 10 minutes or so.
Fantastic. We're looking forward to it. Now, you know, I had to kind of throw you with something.
So throw me.
I put together here, you know, since we're talking on the subject of telephones this evening with Hotline, I am going to quiz you with some telephone trivia. Okay, I want to see how much you've done your research here.
Okay.
And then we'll take some questions from the audience. So this is multiple choice.
Okay.
We've kind of made this as liberal as possible.
We call it multiple guess.
Yep, well, we will see.
Okay.
How good your guesses are.
All right.
Here we go. And if you know the answer out there at home, you know, keep it to yourself until we hear Lance's response here. Alexander Graham Bell suggested what as the original telephone greeting? Was it A, salutations, B, ahoy, as in chips, C, you had me at ring, or D, hello, is it me you're looking for?
I will take E, what fresh hell is this?
A, B, C, or D? Salutations, ahoy, you had me at ring, hello, is it me you're looking for?
I've got to go with salutations.
It is actually ahoy.
Ahoy?
In fact, Thomas Edison was the one who suggested hello.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Thomas Edison is credited with inventing the word hello, which he got from the word holler, and this happened in 1889. He is credited with having invented the word. And prior to that, the most common answer on the telephone was simply yes, which I'm in favor of bringing back.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, I can pull it off. You know, when I'm not doing these interviews, I live my life as Snagglepuss, essentially.
Okay, well, let's exit. Stage right.
Somewhere between Snagglepuss and Tim Gunn. That's where I live. All right, moving on. The creation, okay, now switchboards.
Switchboards.
Now, I know that you're too young to remember this.
But my mother was actually a switchboard operator, so.
Then you may know this question, but, you know, for those youngsters out there, you remember, you know, you've probably seen it in movies where, you know, you had to connect a call.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lady that would take the cord and plug it in a hole, you know, this was a switchboard operator. So the creation of the automatic switchboard, which again was a personless switchboard, automatic, was inspired by A, an operator's strike. B, too many operators named Sarah. C, dueling undertakers. Or D, improper workplace relations between plugs and holes.
Give me that again.
An operator's strike, too many operators named Sarah, dueling undertakers, or improper workplace relations between plugs and holes.
I'm going to have to say, knowing that Bell was anti-union, it was probably the strike.
It is actually dueling undertakers. Now listen, this is a great story.
Mm-hmm.
There were two men that ran, you know,
Mortuaries.
Mortuaries, thank you. And the wife of one of them was the switchboard operator for this town. Uh-huh. And the other guy suspected that any calls that were coming in for his mortuary to, like, so, you know, ask for their services, she was connecting to her husband's mortuary. So when his best friend died, and he ended up being embalmed at the other guy's place, he said, I know that they're up to no good. And this guy was so pissed that he sat down and invented the automated switchboard to prevent these shenanigans from happening. True story. True story.
Mm-hmm. So let's see here. I'm now 0 for 2.
Oh, we're not keeping count.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I feel like the pirates about 10 years ago. Yeah.
Which of the following is not a style of telephone?
Mm-hmm.
Ashtray, butter stamp, candlestick, Eiffel Tower, grandma's mustache, fat boy, oil can.
Well, I gotta go with what I know. Fat boy.
That is a damn telephone. Come on. Grandma's mustache is not a telephone.
Oh, come on. With all that static electricity.
Now, you can pull the audience. If you're stumped, we will allow you to pull the audience.
I can make a help call.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Ring them on the telephone. The first words spoken over telephone by Alexander Graham Bell to his assistant Thomas Watson were, Watson, can you hear me now? Watson, come here. I want you. Watson, is it on? Or Watson, Watson, wow, that sounds funny over the telephone.
Well, this one I actually do know.
Tell us.
It was the first porn call of all time. Watson, come here. I want you.
Yes! We got one. Watson, come here. I want you. Inter-office love, even back then. All right. Fictional phone number prefix 555. Mm-hmm. We know this is used in telephone, or used in film and television. Is an actual area code in which country? Zimbabwe, Australia, Indonesia, or the USA? Somebody whistled out there.
Any help?
Pull the audience.
Okay, audience? In the
I don't know what he's doing.
Pull. Pull the Okay, so I'm not an improv expert. Give
all right. How many for Zimbabwe? Nobody for Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is a country, I assure you. How many for Australia, which is actually a continent as well? Oh, okay. How many for Indonesia? How many for USA?
Yeah.
All right, we got one. This guy in the front row here thinks you have that. But he didn't clap. I don't know if he's not. There we go.
And we got a holler. All right. What the hell? USA.
You are wrong, sir.
You led me down the garden path, didn't you?
I just laid down
the little breadcrumbs and said, here you go.
I tell you what, though. It's Australia, damn it. Funny story. And those of you who clap know this.
But you do it semi the other way, right?
What?
It wouldn't be 5-5. You do it through the rotary dial this way. You do the rotary dial.
Why? Because you're like on the other side of the world.
Exactly.
Is it like a gravity thing?
Well, it's the Coriolis effect.
Don't you? Like how the water swirls the different way down the toilet. Yes, we're back to toilets.
Ding, ding, ding. Thank you.
But no, here's where this came into.
I know physics. I don't know telephones.
Well, here's where this came into the national forefront. You remember the Far Side comic, right? Gary Larson.
Yes.
You know, Far Side. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Bummer of a tattoo.
You have a Gary Larson tattoo?
No. Don't you remember the cow standing there with the other cow, and the one cow has the bullet, the target mark?
A bummer
mark?
Of a birthmark, Hal. Mm-hmm. It was a deer, and there were like 1,000 of these. I'm surprised you remember that after 12 of these martinis. But he actually illustrated a cartoon which had something to do with the devil, and he put, you know, like for a good time call Satan or something, but he had the devil's phone number was 555 something something something, And in Australia, this was actually some guy's number. Okay? So people who read this Far Side comic for a lark, you know, they were calling it. And, you know, Gary Larson's comics got all over the world, so mm-hmm. they got in Australia, too. People were calling this, and this guy was so harassed by people calling him as Satan, as Gary Larson put it, that he sued Gary Larson for, like, millions of dollars.
So I'm having a bad day. I decided to call Satan at the middle of the night just for grins and giggles. Okay.
Gary Larson's got his number. Okay. Gary Larson.
Gary has all of our numbers. Or is that the NSA? I don't remember which.
Maybe both. Maybe both. When Alexander Graham Bell died in 1922, A, there was a funeral. B, his tombstone read, "No longer in service." C, he was buried in a phone booth. D, 14 million phones were silenced for a minute. Or E, every church in Boston rang its bell 12 times.
I've got to go with the phone service going down.
Yes. All of the phones in America went silent for an entire minute. And at that time, it was two. 14 million phones were silenced for a minute. Very good, very good.
Well, thank you.
I recently dropped my phone. A, in the turlet.
Toilet, it seems
B,
to be.
B, in the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
C, like it's hot. Or D, in the parking garage.
Well, since the theme is going, in the toilet.
Well, you know what? I didn't, but I will drop it in the toilet after this, just so you can have another point.
I was going to say it deserves it. It doesn't look like a great phone.
Oh, are you kidding me? This phone is fantastic. I mean, although now it's probably outdated. Thing.
Well, 15 minutes from after you fly a phone.
Yeah. Emma M. Nutt was an Arkansas woman who claimed her phone was possessed by the devil. B, the first female phone operator. C, the first phone sex operator, or D, a hilarious name that I just made up.
D.
She's real.
She is.
Mm-hmm.
And have you called her?
That'll give too much away. Let's pull the audience on this one. An Arkansas woman who claimed her phone was possessed by the devil.
Woo!
Yay.
All right. First female phone operator.
Yeah.
Wendy, you clapped twice. What one is...
I liked the first answer, but she says it's the second.
All right, you clapped louder for the second.
I did.
The first phone sex operator.
Yeah.
You have talked to her.
Several times.
We'll give you a second go at it. And based on that, any...
So I can land on my face twice. Great, thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Let's go with phone sex.
She was the first female phone operator.
Weren't they all females in the beginning?
In 1878. No, this is very interesting.
Really?
They were all males in the beginning. And they actually changed it all over to females because they found that guys, and primarily young men, who were these operators, were always playing pranks. Mm-hmm. And they'd, you know, connect somebody and they'd get chatting with a girl,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like asking her out and things and tying up the line. Honest to God, this is the truth. This is why you had female phone operators, because they couldn't trust the guys. Guys were always playing pranks and things. This is the truth.
And nothing has changed since.
No. Why are the yellow pages yellow? A, to distinguish them from the white pages. B, the original printer ran out of white. C, because most things banana flavored are yellow. Or D, they're actually not yellow at all, just filthy.
To distinguish them from the white pages.
Damn it! The printer ran out of white. This is a true story, too. Cheyenne, Wyoming was the very first appearance of the yellow pages.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happened to be with a printer hat on hand. So from then on, they was all yellow. I went there.
But more importantly, can you find yellow pages anymore?
Yes. Well, not since I canceled my subscription, you know, because I'm all about trees, even yellow ones. And, you know, we're finding everything digitally nowadays.
Absolutely. I mean, you can find yellowpages.com, but you can't find yellow pages.
Every time that brick showed up, you know, in my driveway, I just cringed.
Yeah. and then you had to get rid of it. That was the thing.
I know. But you can opt out now. You know this. Well, there's a website you can go on and opt out. And man, I did that lickety-split.
I opted out just by getting rid of the landline and just going with cell phones. Mm-hmm. And they don't know I exist anymore. That makes me very happy.
Oh, I did the same thing. They still sent me a damn phone book.
Well, you have to stay under the radar a little bit more.
You are kind of under the radar
guy. I am
guy.
Very under the
In
radar
In fact,
guy.
This is the first time that you're ever appearing on film.
Well, I've appeared on film before, but I have worked very hard for the last 15 years to keep my mug off of the internet.
Right. You were a great Chewbacca, by the way.
Thank you very much.
We didn't know it was you, but you had the...
Well, actually, I mean, what I'm doing right now is I'm not appearing as myself. This is more of what Kris Kringle would look like if he was the lead guitarist in The Dead.
Very good.
So in truth, I look entirely different. I actually look like Fred Rogers, but alive.
Oh, well, good. And since you're being so open, let's open it up to questions from the house for Lance or myself, relevant to our topics today or completely batshit crazy off topic.
The naughtier, the better.
Right. We want to hear from you. Oh no, he had a funeral. That was kind of a trick question. You know?
But here is a piece of trivia that
I thought more people would laugh at. That is exactly what it was, because I have no shame.
Is that water in those glasses?
Oh no, this is high octane potato vodka, and in fact, with very little mixer.
It's a perfectly made martini. You take the vodka, you put it in the glass, you go in the other room, and you whisper vermouth.
Yes, that's the
perfect.
Churchill recipe. Yes. Winston Churchill had it the same way. And look what happened to him. He died. Yeah. Yes, there.
Other than the New Works Festival, what other productions has Thoreau and M produced?
Nothing. We are just a...
it's a sham! They're a phantom.
Well, I thank you for asking. Actually, we started producing in 1992. To give you a sense of time of that, in 1992, Bill Clinton was elected for the first time as president. In 1992, a purple dinosaur premiered on PBS. Let's really put this into perspective. In 1992, Miley Cyrus was born.
Miley.
Showing my age.
No, that's okay. She showed a lot more than her age recently, so you're ahead of the game.
So we've been doing this for quite a while. We have been producing in every kind of odd space we can find. We started off in the back of a coffee shop in the Uptown District in a building that doesn't exist anymore.
You brought the house down.
We did. Actually, it was Duquesne University, but they're doing that a lot.
It's getting late night in here.
And we were young, we were full of energy, we were unemployed. We did 10 shows in the first 2 years in that space. Since then, we've done plays in every possible space. We did one show in the yellow parlor of a place that was called Victoria Hall. What that meant is that you were actually sitting with the actors in a parlor room. We could fit maybe 12 people in the audience, and you were no more than the length that I am from the front row from the actors during the show.
Which, for those listening to us at home, is about 2 centimeters.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And it one of the things that we always wanted to do, one of the things that is key to our artistic vision, is that we like to use the phrase re-simplify theater. We don't want to get into the state where you have to have unit sets, where you have to have lots of lights. We want the relationship between the actor and the audience to be key. If you have an actor who's sending a thought and an audience member who's receiving it, it doesn't matter if you have 100 people in your venue or 100 seats in your venue, 1,000 seats in your venue. If you're making that one connection, that's what it's all about for us. So we've produced in large venues, we've produced in small venues, but really what we're all about is doing that really intimate play.
Great.
One of the things that's great about the Arcade Theater is that it is so intimate. We're moments away from, like, being able to throw things at you. We are Well, I am anyway.
Think fast.
And that's what's the joy about this space is the fact that you're going to see the actors and you're going to be able to this is going to be almost television acting. They don't have to do the.
So you can click it off halfway through.
I was going to say you just TiVo it and go and see it later, but that's
also very funny. Yeah.
But that's the joy of the kind of theater we like to do. Good we team. Like to do small intimate pieces.
Excellent. Good question. Anybody else? Raise them. Yes.
What are your thoughts about Edward Snowden and NSA? You said NSA earlier.
What are my thoughts about the NSA?
And Edward Snowden.
Well, I can't say anything about the NSA right now.
Listen, if the NSA is watching my show, I'll throw you all a damn party, all right?
Not only are they watching it, they're taping it.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Well, then they owe me money. Yes, that's what I'm thinking. Vizelli's right. I'm thinking, hey, more hits. All right. What do you think about Snowden? Treasonous hero? I think that's what we're getting at here, you know? Or is this, you know, do you stay out of politics?
Whenever I'm being a professional, I stay out of politics. Whenever I'm on the ground, we supported Obama and we had one of his canvassers living in our house and we... did a lot of work as well, but that's just in our personal life. We don't mix that with our professional lives.
Understood. Yeah, mm-hmm. Good. We have a question there. Yes.
I have a question. You've been producing and doing this for many years now. Do you see a trend in how theater is accepted in Pittsburgh over these number of years?
That is a great, great question.
And thank you. I'm done for tonight.
Okay. Well, if you'd like to come up, you're actually doing better than I am. Here's the thing. When we started our class of theaters, their names you'll recognize. They're in the same year we started, Irish and Classical Theater started. When we started, Prime Stage started. At the same time, in the same year that we started, companies like Axiom and Time Space and Open Stage started. Some of them had really long careers. Some of them flamed out in a matter of months, years. What we found is that the great thing about Pittsburgh theater is that there is this can-do attitude. Somebody comes up with the idea of, I want to do a play. And they put together a company, and it starts. One of the actors that we worked with 3 years ago at the New Works Festival, Sarah Fisher, she and her husband Vince started 12 Piers. Great theater company. And they built it just out of determination. Wendy and I started Thoreau and M out of sheer determination and boredom. 10 years ago, Kate McKissick joined us. And she joined us because she was interested in joining us. What you don't see in Cleveland, what you don't see in Indianapolis, what you don't see in San Diego, and I've been to these places, is that they have a big cultural theaters, but they don't have the vibrant small theaters. They don't have people who are coming out of college and saying, you know what, let's start one and see what happens. And that is what's really unique to Pittsburgh. I don't know if it's the blue collar nature of the history of the city. I don't know if it's the fact that we have such great universities where people are coming out and going, I can do that better. I don't know what it is, but it's a wonderful, vibrant kind of subculture that mm-hmm. exists nowhere else. So give Pittsburgh an applause.
Yeah.
It's you guys. It's you.
I tell you what, you know, a program like Berg Vivant could not exist without that. I mean, that's really why we're here, you know, to observe that and chronicle that and give it some attention. And we're having a ball.
And we appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you.
Really? Aw, hugs.
I know.
In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cephalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, downtown, and Bergvivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvivant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvivant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.